everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Greater European Talks for this season. In this episode, we are going to talk about Russia's leave from the Council of Europe. Today, we are joined by Diego Sanchez, the Deputy Editor-in-Chief of the Institute for a Greater Europe, and Mikhail Zakharov, one of our writers in the Institute. Welcome. Why don't we start off by introducing yourselves and this topic?
Thank you for the introduction, Shamima. I'm currently a Master's of Law candidate at Universitat Pompeu Fabra in Barcelona, Spain, and also a candidate at the Postgraduate Certificate on EU Environmental Law at Universitat de Barcelona, also in Spain.
My name is Mikhail Zakharov. Dear colleagues, I'm from Russia. I've been studying the questions of European security for several years, and today I'm a freelance journalist delving into the questions of interacting of NATO with Russia and the questions of keeping European security in different parts of Europe.
Great. Welcome you both. So to start off the topic, the invasion in Ukraine, which is a fundamental violation of international law, ignited a clear reaction from the Council of Europe. On March 16, 2022, the Committee of Ministers took a firm stance by deciding on the withdrawal of the Russian Federation from the Council of Europe. Questions surrounding the withdrawal have been the subject of many scholarly debates, which is what we're here to talk about today. I think it's important to examine this condemnment from its basis, which is the resolution of the European Court of Human Rights on the 22nd of March. How can this decision be interpreted?
Well, the European Court of Human Rights, as you mentioned, gathered in plenary session under Rule 20.1 of the Rules of the Court on the 22nd of March, passed a resolution on the consequences of the cessation of membership of the Russian Federation to the Council of Europe in the light of Article 58 of the European Convention on Human Rights. However, from the text of the resolution isn't clear on the basis of which article of the court in its plenary session composition decided to challenge this interpretation of the convention and declare the Russian Federation cease to be a high contracting party to the convention on the 16th of September 2022, that is 6 months after the expulsion from the Council of Europe. And the resolution then continues saying that the court remains competent to deal with applications directed against the Russian Federation in relation to acts or omissions capable of constituting a violation of the convention, provided that they occurred until the 16th of September 2022, and their suspension of the examination of all applicants against the Russian Federation pursuant to the decision of the president of the court on the 16th of March 2022 is lifted with immediate effect. And yet, following this resolution, the Committee of Ministers on the 23rd of March passed one more resolution on legal and financial consequences of the cessation of membership of the Russian Federation in the Council of Europe and decided that, in line with the resolution of the 22nd of March 2022 of the European Court of Human Rights, the court remains competent to deal with applications directed against the Russian Federation in relation to acts or omissions capable of constituting a violation of the convention, provided then they occurred until the 16th of September 2022. The decision is defensible from a political and moral perspective. That's quite understandable, I think. However, it seems that institutions of Council of Europe will likely face quite many challenges in the coming months and years, because they will have to resolve the many legal consequences of this decision. Once again, it's understandable why it happened, but the court is to manage to solve the number of legal and practical difficulties of this decision and of this solution.
Well, I thank the inputs given by my colleague Mikhaila. I would like to, in this case, continue exploring the legal consequences of this resolution, the European Court of Human Rights, that, of course, is of transcendental nature, given that it's the second time a member of the Council of Europe has decided to, in this case, has withdrawn from the Council. In the case of the Russian Federation, it was expelled under the procedures of Article 8 of the Statute of London. Now, the most important part here is that according to Article 58 of the European Convention of Human Rights, the Russian Federation will continue to remain obliged under the terms of the convention during the 6 months period after the notice of intention to denounce the convention. Of course, this procedure is not an interpretation of the court in a strict sense. It is the court trying to give a practical meaning to the Articles 58, Paragraph 2 of the European Convention on Human Rights. Now, the main issue here is that, as it was cited by my colleague Mikhail, the Committee of Ministers of the Council of Europe declared that the Russian Federation has ceased to be a member as of 16 March 2022. And according to the rules of the court that is also included in its basic parts, in the European Convention, all the high contracting parties have the right to nominate a judge to the court. Then the interpretation of Article 58, Paragraph 2 will need to be reconciled with the right of all members of the Council of Europe that are parties as well to or are subject to the jurisdiction of the European Convention of Human Rights to nominate for this judge to partake in the deliberations and hearings of any future case brought under the 6 months period. Of course, when we analyze the main part of the resolution, if any act or omission takes place before 16th of September 2022, taking into consideration that according to the convention, all the individuals affected that were likely to be subject under jurisdiction of the Russian Federation have to exhaust the domestic remedies before bringing a complaint to the court. And the court, according to the last paragraph of that resolution, will need to analyze whether it is competent or has jurisdiction in case the Russian Federation has not nominated a judge, and in case as well, the Russian Federation will be likely to oblige or comply with the decision to be adopted.
Very interesting comments, both of you. So do you actually think that it is possible to not be a member of the Council, but remain subject to the jurisdiction of the court?
To be honest, I feel quite skeptical about it. I think the decision draws the curtain on Russia's quarter-century membership of the Council of Europe, and I see it not possible, at least in the near future. As I remember, the president of the Parliamentary Assembly of the Council of Europe, who welcomed the decision, said that it said that they had to expel a country after 26 years of membership, but it was necessary, and he said that he was glad they dared to do so. I think that the Russian side has almost the same feeling, that maybe it's said, but it was necessary. So I think both sides are glad they dared to do so, and I think that nothing will change in the near future, or at least the perspectives today are definitely covered with the Pogo war. Maybe it will change in the upcoming months, in the upcoming half a year before the 16th of September. But to be honest, I feel quite skeptical about it.
I would like to, in this case, express that if we analyze and interpret Article 58 and its literal in its literal meaning, following the rules of interpretation under international law, what we observe is that it is not possible for a state that is not a member to the Council of Europe to be also a party to the European Convention on Human Rights, which is a requirement for jurisdiction to be exercised by that state. And as a consequence of that jurisdiction exercised by the state, to be then examined and analyzed by an independent tribunal to find whether there was a violation of the rights and freedoms protected by the European Convention. Notwithstanding that, we also need to take into account that the same instrument considers that even if you cease to be a member to the Council of Europe, there is a 6 month period in which the state will continue to be bound by the jurisdiction of the European Court of Human Rights. Of course, this is a different question from whether after you cease to be a member of the Council of Europe, the judgments of the European Convention of Human Rights, of the European Court of Human Rights, will, in this case, produce any practical effect on reality. The latter is justified in the fact that the judgments of the court are executed by an organ of the Council of Europe and not by the court itself. Of course, then it will be for the court to decide on the following months how does the activation of the Article 58 of the Convention and Article 8 of the Statute of London procedures will affect the individual's affected rights for the judgment to be implemented and executed, and how will the Council of Europe supervise the compliance of that judgment if the state that is condemned to repair the violation is no longer a member of that council. That is one of the interpretations. I believe it will be for the court to clarify, or for, on the other hand, the Council of Europe Committee of Ministers to also provide some enlightenment.
Okay, and last but not least, the court recently announced that it will be accepting applications regarding violations of the Human Rights Convention at the 16th of September 2022. What sort of effects could this decision produce?
I consider the decision to extend the application of the convention to be defensible from a political and moral perspective. However, determining the date of the day resolves one legal issue. And I see many others will soon arise, as my colleague Diego mentioned, should consist of a number of judges equal to that of the contracting parties. As soon as the state's membership ceases, the judge, let's put it in the brackets, must leave the bench. As a result, the recently elected Russian judge will continue hearing cases. Of course, only until the 16th of September, on which day he will no longer be the permanent member. However, the judge elected is elected in respect of the contracting party concerned seats as an official member of the chamber in the Great Chamber. And the most important cases against the Russian Federation thus can be heard in the absence of the Russian judge. We will need to decide how to comply with Article 26 when the respondent state is no longer a party to the convention. If the permanent judge is unavailable, as I remember, Section 4 provides that the president of the court can choose an ad hoc judge from a list submitted by Russia in advance. However, it seems unlikely that the individuals currently on the list will participate in hearings. Even if they do agree to serve, it's unclear whether the Russian government will take any part in the proceedings. It's number one. And if the court manages to solve the legal and practical questions of judging a non-cooperating contracting party, one can question the effectiveness of pursuing human rights complaints against Russia in Strasbourg. And at least such judgment, while this party is absent, opens the court to criticism that the proceedings are contrary to the equality of arms principles. That's what I think.
I'd like to also welcome again the inputs given by my colleague Mikhail. It is true that I feel inclined to respectfully disagree with the interpretation of Article 26 of the European Commission of Human Rights, because paragraph 4 of that article allows the court, whenever the judge chosen by a state is not present or is unable to assume the duties of his entrusted with, then the president of the court can name another judge from the list that has been submitted by the, in this case, by the party, in this case, by the Russian Federation, to fill in the seats in the chamber or the grand chamber of the court. Certainly, that is, of course, a procedure that would require to see how practical it can be when the court starts analyzing and entertaining any application on the possible violations that result or derive from the acts or omissions of the Russian Federation in the following 6 months. One of the examples that we, for example, can take into account if we see the following events of the Russian invasion of Ukraine is the precedent set by the Georgia versus Russia to a judgment of the Grand Chamber. According to this judgment of the court, when interpreting Article 1 of the Convention, we see the court is reluctant to, in this case, establish that a state has jurisdiction during the course of events of the armed conflict. For the court, there is, in this case, the jurisdictional link starts to apply or is activated once the armed conflict or the international armed conflict has transformed into a non-active phase. So, of course, there will be challenges in the jurisdictional part for the court. To what extent the Russian Federation is responsible or not for any alleged violation of the convention, either outside or inside of its territorial borders. But it is true that Article 26.4 of the convention that provides for the election of the judge whenever there is no judge from that state or the judge is unable to exercise its duties, we still need to see how the court reacts, because the resolution that was adopted by the court was adopted by its plenary, including the Russian judge. the lack of any indication of dissenting or any separate opinion to the resolution would allow us to be inclined to consider the procedure is consistent with the convention. It is true that the court will be open to criticisms in depending on how it handles this extraordinary situation. However, I do believe that the court will also be challenged to the extent that it needs to demonstrate that 6 months period notice is still a moment in which the alleged victims can submit their applications to the court and find redress for any violation they could have suffered within or outside of the boundaries of the Russian Federation.
Thank you very much, Diego and Mikhail, for joining us and for your insightful comments. Just say something along the lines of thank you, something like that.
Thank you very much, Amira, for the invitation. And thank you, Mikhail, for joining me in this discussion. I believe this discussion, I hope the discussion to be enriching for the debate to continue on this topic and for all our audience to also engage or participate.
I want to thank heartily the organizers. Thank you, Diego. Sorry for being slightly late today, because sometimes it seems that this decision, while politically and morally justifiable, is not very obvious legally. I meant it raises lots of issues, and I hope all these hurdles will be overcome in the coming months or maybe years. Once again, thanks a lot.
We all truly hope so. That's all for today. Thank you for listening. If you would like to join one of our future episodes, please email us at podcast@institutegreatereurope.com. See you in the next episode.